Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, together with Gail Seiler. Hello, Gail.
Hello, and hello to you, the listener. It's another beautiful spring day out there.
A very pleasant weekend is predicted to be ahead of us.
And it's Easter weekend. If you're celebrating Easter, we wish you and your loved ones a happy Easter. We'd like to mention that tomorrow, Ryman Gardens and the Ames JCs will be co-hosting a spring egg hunt at Ryman Gardens with egg hunts for children 6th grade and younger. That's tomorrow, Saturday, from 9 in the morning to 11 at Ryman Gardens. There will also be craft and activity stations and a visit from the Ryman Garden Spring Bunny. For more information, go to rgevents@iastate.edu.
Today is also the first day of Passover. Since this holiday is a less known holiday in Iowa, we've asked KHOI local reporter Jim Werbel to stop by and inform us about that.
And Ames Public Relations Officer Susan Guiazda will also be joining us in the second half of the hour for an update from the City of Ames. A lot is planned for April in Ames. Right now, though, we have some special guests in the studio. Joe Brecky, a teacher at Ames High, is here with some Ames High students. So let's get started with that. KHOI, we've had a small part in a collaboration with Ames High on a project called The Story County Stories that was started by Mr. Joe Brecky, who's in our studio. In this project, Ames High students have been interviewing someone of importance in their life, and then they made a short audio production from that interview. Now that work is done, and they're ready to share these audio stories. So welcome, Joe. And welcome to Jonah Glenn and Will Weber, who are in the studios with us.
Thanks for having us.
KHOI helped train these reporters on how to build audio stories, and we'll have a special program on KHOI when the project is finished. And Joe, you'll be taking over the studios with some of the students who did the audio, and you'll all be sharing some of your stories with us on the air. So we're looking forward to that.
So are we.
And also, I think we're going to be interspersing some of the stories during regular programming throughout the day, too. So thanks for providing content for KHOI, community content.
Yeah, thanks really, for the opportunity.
I like the sound of that, students taking over the radio station. It sounds good. Thanks for being here, all of you. And Joe, let's start with you and just ask you to describe the Story County Stories project.
You bet. Well, many of your listeners may be familiar with StoryCorps, a national public radio program that began after 9/11 by founder David Isay to give people an opportunity to tell the stories of their lives and to speak with their loved ones, to have meaningful conversations. The first StoryCorps booth was created in Grand Central Station in New York City, and it was just a place where people could go and have a meaningful conversation, which was then recorded and sent to the Library of Congress. At that, when that was happening, I was a journalist in California and was interviewing people from all walks of life that I'd never met, and I started realizing that I could get to know a lot of important things about someone with a few good questions. And I started to realize that I was learning things about strangers that I didn't know about my own family. And after those years out there, I came back home and started interviewing my grandmother, who I wanted to know more about, and my grandfather. I wanted to know more about my grandfather, who'd passed away when I was 12. And so I started on these interview projects. And when I became a teacher then, I started thinking, this is something worth sharing. This was something I didn't anticipate being so powerful to me. So the Story County Stories Project emerged out of that experience, modeled on StoryCorps, but just trying to give students a reason to sit down with somebody they admire, an elder of some kind, and ask questions that matter.
You felt it was a good enough experience to want to pass it on to students. You felt it had value.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think the value in it, you know, there are a number of things that I think are worth doing in this project. The students, I think, learn a bit about composition through figuring out, you know, how am I going to tell this story? How am I going to help my listener understand this story? There's obviously interviewing skills. There are technical skills involved in producing a podcast. But ultimately, I think the most important part of the project is the opportunity to sit down together and have a meaningful conversation.
Joe, you're a writing teacher at the high school. Is that correct?
Correct. Writing and literature.
And can you just also fill us in on how many students, how many, just the extent? Because it's quite a big project that's grown this year. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, last year we kind of did a pilot project where it was just a few classes were trying this out. And then this year, the other teachers that teach senior English all jumped on and gave it a shot. And so we have over 300 students that have conducted interviews and recorded podcasts.
So tell us how it works.
From the students, so the students are assigned to select someone to interview or multiple people, and then we go about composing questions. Before we compose questions, we looked at the models and we listened to a number of StoryCorps podcasts. And the students went online, and anybody can go on and listen to those anytime. And so we listened to quite a few and used those as our models. And from those, we then decided who we would like to interview, composed questions, shared ideas. And then, of course, the two of you came to the high school and talked about how do we pull a story out of someone? How do we go back and find the story? Once we've conducted our first interviews, how can we help our interviewee tell the story that needs to be told? And so many of the students went back and did second interviews. And then we spent a couple of weeks really listening to the stories that were being told. And it's interesting as a teacher, you know, with this digital revolution and this one-on-one computer situation that we have at the high school, we're constantly trying to figure out how do we make this a useful tool. And as I would go around the classroom and see the kids, headphones in, on their computers, editing these podcasts, listening over and over and over to the stories of their elders, I thought, this is it. This is the kind of stuff we should be doing.
And what's it?
It is listening to each other, composing, thinking about audience, using these tools to communicate a mood, a feeling, and then going through this lengthy process. I think that one of the other things that I hope they learn is that things worth doing take time. And this became a tedious process of whittling down 40 to 45 minutes of material into a 2 to 3 minute podcast. That's difficult, and you have to be selective. And many students struggle with that because we want to just get it done quickly and have it ready-made. And it's really a valuable process to go back and go back and go back. And so I think that is an essential part of the process. And then after we do that, we listen to each other's. We had critiques and you know, is this working? Is that working? Does the music fit the mood of this story? That was an important question that I think we wrestled with for a while. And how do we identify the mood of a piece, of a story? So we revised, and sometimes it meant changing the music. Sometimes it meant selecting a different portion of the interview to include. Sometimes it meant going back and filling in missing details so that the students would have to record over a voiceover narration to fill in some gaps. That was the production process. And then, of course, now we're at this point where the students listen to each other's. And we've taken some time then to reflect on the process as a whole.
We're talking with Joe Brecky, who's a literature and writing teacher at Ames High School. And he is the person who started the Story County Stories Project, which is kind of modeled after the StoryCorps.
Absolutely.
Process of interviewing people that are important to you, and he's been working with his students, and we have two of his students with us today in the studio, so maybe
let's turn to them.
Should we hear from them what happened?
So Will or Jonah, what are your thoughts on doing this project? What did it mean to you, and what did you get from it?
I'm Will Weber, and I'm a senior here with Jonah. And I mean, when this project was first introduced, I know I was really excited for it, just because I know, like, with my grandparents and things and the elders that I know, they have some great stories to tell. So why not introduce yourselves to them in a more different light in actually interviewing them? So I was really excited, and I actually interviewed my neighbor. He's in his mid-60s and actually a Vietnam veteran. And we've always kind of known each other, but never in a light like this.
Mm-hmm.
So one day after school, I went over, talked to him for actually about 45 minutes and just kind of introduced this whole project to him, and he was more than willing and actually kind of ecstatic to do it.
Really? So he liked the idea?
He loved the idea, and I know his kids are all grown, and he's having grandkids and things, so it's him and his wife at home. They don't really have the opportunity to interact with,
younger people.
Yeah. So we were over there and talking for a long time, and eventually I set up an interview here at KHOI just for the sound quality and the wonderful people down here, of course. So we came in here, and we actually talked for about an hour. Just came to find out where he grew up, how he ended up coming from small town Rock Falls, Iowa, all the way across the world to Vietnam during the Tet Offensive in 1967, I think it was. And just you would never find out things about these people if you don't ask them these questions. And I think it was just a wonderful experience to learn more about somebody and really just gain a better relationship with the people around you.
So for you, it really had to do with gaining a new relationship with somebody was in your life.
Yeah, definitely a new friend now. We've always been right next to each other. I mean, I've lived in the same spot for 3 years, right next to Jonah, too. And he's our neighbor, and neither of us have really gotten to know him too well. But, I mean, after this experience, I know he's definitely a new, better friend.
Okay, and then your assignment was to take that and make a story.
Yeah, exactly.
How did that go?
Well, like Mr. Brecky said, whittling it down from about an hour of conversation to a two-minute story kind of got difficult, and it took quite a while, and I had to work over a long period of time to get it. But I was lucky enough that my neighbor Tom was kind of an excellent storyteller, so got a great story about how him and his older brother ended up pulling somebody out of a frozen lake in Rock Falls, and that was a major component of it, and then the first time he went over to Vietnam. So just his storytelling ability really helped out with my production of it.
And did you learn something about writing and storytelling from the process?
Yeah, I had never really put together a story of voices like this. I mean, for years we've been writing narratives on paper and even composing videos sometimes, but when it's just a voice, you have to factor in so many different aspects, such as fluctuation or, like the pauses and just the natural breaks in what we're saying. So it really just added a lot of different aspects into what, goes into an actual story.
Yeah, it's like creating a piece of art, all the layers of what you add into it to tell the story that you want to tell, but it's also the other person's story, too. So there's really some kind of collaboration there as well.
Yeah, sometimes editing audio is almost more like poetry than prose for me because it's so concentrated, what you're working with.
Well, let's hear from Jonah next.
Hi, I'm Jonah Glenn. I'm a senior at Ames High. And along with Will, I also did the StoryCorps Stories Project. And unlike Will, I interviewed a family member of mine. I interviewed my mom. And honestly, at first, when Mr. Brecky introduced this project to us, I saw a lot of work. And I wasn't really sure.
Sounding kind of stupid.
Yeah. No, I mean, the stupid part, I listened to the Story County Stories, and that's what kind of inspired me, like seeing how important the stories were to everyone that we're interviewing and being interviewed. And that's when I kind of finally got the motivation to start working on my project. And I interviewed my mom, and I had interviewed her twice, actually, because the first time I just had some general questions, and it was kind of difficult getting her to go into detail on certain things. Like a lot of things, actually.
She was reluctant to talk?
Yeah, about certain things. But I think we interviewed like in her room, and I have little brothers and a little sister in my house that were just very interruptive, and it was just difficult like keeping one solid like flow of conversation, which is really important in this project.
So how did you what did you do next to get better stories? Or?
Once I got done with that first interview, I figured out a story. Actually, when she was our age, a second semester senior in high school, she didn't go to high school, and she left to go work as a page at the Senate. So we talked about that, and I had to derive like specific questions about that to kind of get her to go into more detail. And from those questions, I was able to put together a really kind of interesting story.
Did you learn things about her that you didn't know before?
Yeah, actually, I didn't even know she did the Page Project, and I also didn't know she was, like, such a big part of it. So the Page Project, basically, they're kind of, like, just hands on deck for the senators and the people at the Senate, and she actually worked for the president of the Senate at the time, Leonard Boswell. So she was kind of, like, the head of the pages, which at the time is kind of interesting. So actually, at that time, my mom was really interested in politics and really wanted to go into politics. Unfortunately, I came along, and that had to kind of end. But so, she decided to be a mom instead of a politician, I guess.
So did you find that this project changed your relationship a little bit with her too? Like
yeah.
It did well?
It was actually just really interesting to sit down and talk to her. And like we talk quite a bit all the time, but sitting down and having a really long conversation, which was that was really important.
Yeah, it's just amazing how you think you know someone and you think you know a lot about them. And then you realize that you maybe don't have frequent, meaningful conversations, and there's lots of things that you mm-hmm. don't know about them.
So did you find the process of making the story then something that you really could learn from in terms of the just the story-building aspect of it?
Yeah, it was a really interesting thing to learn because it took a lot more effort than I thought it would. And at the end, it turned out to be incredibly rewarding because you sit down, you listen to this 3-minute piece, and it just brings back so many positive memories of the whole mm-hmm. the whole project in general. And you get to think of all the positive memories you had with the person that you interviewed, and it just kind of reminds you of like everything that went on during that whole process.
I was going to add, too, that you know, you've asked, did they learn new things about the people that they interviewed? And I think absolutely. And then another incredible thing that happens for me as a teacher, and then I think for the rest of our class, is that we, of course, get insights into these other people's lives, into our students' lives and their families' lives beyond the classroom. And as we've now listened to each other's this past week, I hear students talking to each other, that learning things about each other that many of these kids have gone to school together for 12 years, and now they're learning things about each other that they never knew, and there's a genuine enthusiasm in sharing the stories and in learning about each other's lives. That's been pretty cool to see.
And I have to say, just in the short time that we were in your class, Gail and I went to 3 classes. Just in that short time, I heard some stories that I'm still thinking about.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I really, really enjoyed hearing the stories that the students were talking about when we were there. Now, these stories can be heard online.
Correct. Again, last year we kind of did a beta version of this, and so we didn't get the stories uploaded and live for the public. But now this year we've refined the process a little bit. And so we have a website called the Story County Stories Project. And by the way, when I moved here, my wife grew up in Ames. And so we moved here from California to be close to home and family. And when I moved here and I pulled up behind a car one of my first days here and I saw Story on the license plate, I just thought, we got to do something with this. I mean, and so
I'm in the right county.
I'm in the right place. So Story County, I just thought, something's got to be done here.
Yeah.
So that's how the name kind of came about. And now we have free advertising on every vehicle in Ames, right? I've forgotten your question.
The website.
Okay.
The website. Yes.
We'll put the website on the license plates too eventually. but right now we'll post it on the Ames High School website. So we'll post a link there. And so, if you go to the Ames High School website, and it's not up yet, but later today, that's the plan.
That's the plan.
As to get that on the Ames High School website. And so it'll be a link that says Story County Stories Project. And then hopefully it'll be on the KHOI website as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Link.
Great.
Yeah. As always, we post these local talk shows on our homepage a little bit later in the day, and we'll include the links there so that can be found there as well. And we're really looking forward to hearing the stories. And then sometime in the very near future, you're going to come in with some students and air some of these stories as well. So we'll keep listeners updated on when that's going to happen.
And I just want to, if we have time here, I just want to say thanks again for partnering with us. I think the partnership with KHOI creates an authenticity for this project that it would not otherwise have. So much of what happens in a school classroom, and we're trying to change this for sure, but so much of what happens is contained in the classroom and a project is done for a teacher's eyes. And I think that some of the authenticity is lost there because mm-hmm. it's just a project that only the teacher is going to see. And by opening it up to the public in this way, with your help, I think that maybe the students would be able to speak to this, that you take things a little more seriously and you're going to put more effort in and you're going to revise, and refine your product because you have a real audience. And that's what we want to do with more of the projects that we're working on at school is give the students an authentic audience. And KHOI has definitely provided that, so we're grateful.
And also it's important to hear these voices. It's a contribution that you guys are making to the community by bringing these voices to the air. So we really appreciate that. Jonah and Will, any last words?
I just want to say thank you, not only to Mr. Brecky, but people at KHOI, I know, like he was saying, the authenticity, it definitely helps. I went into this little booth over here, and we sat down, and it's really close, intimate space where you just feel like you can share more things. So thank you for the opportunity to do that. And the sound quality, I know, is a lot better than just recording on the computer.
Yes.
So that was awesome. And then probably one of my favorite projects we've done in high school.
Yeah, I'd also just like to say thank you to Mr. Brecky and also the people here at KHOI, because making us do this project, even though some of us were reluctant at first, it turned out to be one of the most important projects I've done so far. And the thing that I've definitely learned from this is that you can't just stop at one interview, I feel like. I feel like you need to interview everyone close around you so you can have just kind of like records of how everyone is and was, I guess.
Why do you say this was one of the most important projects?
Because, like, having these important conversations with your loved ones is something that I feel like everyone needs to do, just because you need to talk about things that are important to you and your loved one. Because this audio file, it's never really going to go away, I guess, so... Mm-hmm. My kids way in the future are definitely going to be able to listen to this interview, and their kids and the kids after that. So
you're going to do some more interviews, you think, just for yourself?
Yeah,
or your family?
Just for myself. I plan on interviewing my dad, my step-parents, and my grandparents as well.
Same here. I know just talking to my parents about this, and they love it. I have some grandparents that are getting up there in age, and my dad is really kind of taken to it, and he wants to interview his dad who – lives up on a farm in Wisconsin. He lives in the same room, or he sleeps in the same room he was born in. He wants to go up there and interview him before not too much longer, because we really don't know how long parents, grandparents, anybody's going to be around. And when you have an audio file, like he was saying, it's here forever.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. Joe, it's spreading. See what you've done?
And it's amazing how a really powerful moment of communication can really penetrate and really change our inner landscape permanently. For the better. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Joe, any last words?
I think we've covered a lot of ground here this morning, so I just appreciate the opportunity. And again, you know, you thank me. I just said, here's something other people are doing. We should do this too. And the students have taken it up, as you can hear, and they've run with it. So it's pretty cool.
So it's happening again next year?
That is the plan. And with this website, one of the things we had to figure out this year, and I've been trying to figure out with a couple people at the school district, is how can we archive these so that when Will's younger brother is a senior, he can hear Will's interview. Jonah's got younger brothers, he mentioned. When they get to be seniors, they can hear what, you know, how Jonah interviewed Mom. And we want these to be around for a long time as an oral history of the people that have lived here in Ames. We hope it grows.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
That's wonderful.
Well, we've been speaking with Ames High School teacher Joe Brecky, who's been leading up the Story County Stories Project, a project involving a number of teachers and students at the high school. And you've been doing this in collaboration with KHOI. And Jonah Glenn and Will Weber were also here, some of the students who've been conducting interviews with important people in their lives and crafting the interviews into stories for podcast and for the radio. With a little help from their teachers and some training from KHOI, and we're looking forward to hearing some of these stories on KHOI. And the stories are also going up online, sounds like today.
That's the plan.
And we'll be putting a link to that on our homepage, and there'll also be a link at the Ames High website.
It's been great being involved in this. We look forward to what comes next. So thank you all for coming in.
Thanks for the opportunity, guys.
We're going to give you a little music to take your leave by as our next guests come into the studio. This is in honor of Easter. It's a song called You Need Jesus, sung by the Corinthian Baptist Youth Choir, recorded in 1975.
The
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in Central Iowa. And you've been listening to You Need Jesus, sung by the Corinthian Baptist Youth Choir from Des Moines, from an album which was recorded in 1975 and has been re-released this year. To access it online, you can Google Iowa History Reissue Series, or you can check our website at khoifm.org later today, and we'll be posting a link to where you can access this album.
Well, now that we've heard some Easter music, we also want to recognize that Passover starts today. So we've asked Jim Warble to join us here in the studio so we can ask him about Passover. Jim is usually with KHOI as a reporter, but today you're here as a guest.
Welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
It's great to have you, and thanks for agreeing to do this. Can you give us an explanation to start with? What is Passover celebrating?
Passover is the celebration of the Exodus from Egypt. The story of Moses, ironically, Moses is never mentioned at all in the Seder. The story is a story, as many people know, about going from slavery to freedom to redemption. It ultimately ends with the statement, may next year will we be in Jerusalem, which actually means may we be in the city of peace. People interpret that in many different ways, but if you take it literally, it says, may we all be in the city of peace next year.
So it's a liberation holiday.
Yes, very much so.
Tell us what happens during the holiday.
The holiday is 8 days long, and during that time, you're only supposed to eat matzah, which was the bread that was made on the backs of the people escaping from Egypt. It's a thin cracker.
And the idea is that the bread is thin because there wasn't time to let the yeast rise?
That's correct.
People had to leave in a hurry?
There's no yeast in it. It was just baked in the sun.
Uh-huh.
So that's traditionally it. Then the holiday became more and more as time went on. And now there's the whole retelling of the story about the Exodus from Egypt, as well as a lot of celebration about personal freedom and redemption and peace for all later on.
And the retelling is the Seder?
Yes.
So what is a Seder?
A Seder is a very unique event. It's hard to explain it in short ways.
Paint us a picture. What does it look like?
For Christians, there's nothing like it. It's a little like some people compare it to Thanksgiving, because there's a lot of really good food that people have, and I'll be making food with Delphine later on today, and it'll be going on all day, and it's a very elaborate food. What you do is you have a book called the Haggadah, which is basically referring to the order of the service. And so you have to go through certain steps. And there's a lot of laughter. There's a lot of seriousness. There's a lot of talk going on. Serious families, we have our Seder going on for 4 hours, and everyone who's been to it is very entertained. And it always ends with songs and very silly things, because there's a statement in there from the Bible about turning the hearts of adults into children. And so there's some very childish things that happen at the end that are absolutely hysterical and lots of fun. It's a very complicated holiday, unlike any holiday I've ever known. It's my favorite Jewish holiday.
So you have good memories of Passover. And why is it your favorite?
Every year it means something different to me. Every year we recreate it. In our family, we provide supplemental materials that can be inserted at different places that deal with the different themes.
So to be clear, the Seder is a dinner where really the story of the Exodus is told in relation to eating various types of food. Is that correct?
And a lot of deeper thought.
So they're
trying to relate things that happened 5,000 years ago to things that are happening today.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the foods that are important in that telling that story in a Seder?
Horseradish.
Why horseradish?
Tears of slavery. It's supposed to bring tears to your eye. Harosets, which is an interesting mixture of apples, nuts, dried fruit, little wine, cinnamon, sugar, honey that you put on the matzah. That is an appetizer. Matzah ball soup, of course. matzah. Many Jews consider it an art to make a dessert, because what do you serve for dessert? Because you can't use flour in anything, or at least bread flour. So for a while we were using nut flour to make a very nice cake, and it was delicious. So there's all sorts of different things. And then there's Sephardic traditions and Ashkenazic traditions for food. We do Ashkenazic traditions. So for whatever reason, my family will always make chopped liver. Now, that's not traditional, but that's what our family does.
And Ashkenazic is the more European-based Jewry, and the Sephardic is?
Ashkenazic is Northern European.
Northern European.
Sephardic is Mediterranean.
Mediterranean.
So the Jews from Spain were considered Sephardic Jews.
Well, I want to come over to your house for a Seder.
You're welcome.
The whole city's invited.
One more thing we spoke about briefly prior to the show was the question was the Last Supper of Jesus a Seder? Can you share your comments with that? Because it's kind of interesting.
At that time, there was no Seder as we know it today. There was no Haggadah. But you're supposed to it's a feast, and so there's a lot of food, and you're supposed to eat matzah. So it's generally believed that it was a Passover meal, whether it was the first night of Passover or any other night of Passover, it was a Passover feast, more than likely.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Any other comments about Passover that you think are helpful in understanding this really lovely spring holiday?
It is a spring holiday. It's also a celebration of spring. It's a unique holiday. That's all I can say. It's also based on the lunar calendar. So everybody wonders, well, when is Passover? It's based on the lunar calendar. So it's based on tonight there will be a full moon. There's always a full moon for the Seder. And that's why Easter varies, because it's always the Sunday after the full moon, after the equinox, so that the two can never coincide on the same day. Because so you're combining a solar and a lunar calendar.
Interesting. Huh.
In Christianity, Easter is one of the main times when people go to church. Does the Ames Jewish congregation have celebrations connected with Passover as well?
This is a family holiday.
So it stays at home.
It stays at home. There are congregations that have all congregation seders. It's largely for people who don't have a Seder in their own family.
Yeah, kind of like Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim.
Well, thank you.
It's really, really nice to hear about it, and I am coming to your house tonight.
Whether you like it or not.
All right.
Thank you.
Happy
Bye-bye.
Passover.
Thank
Happy
you.
Happy Passover.
Egyptian cities. We worked hard but prayed to God and he freed us all, so get ready.
It's Pesach.
Oh man.
One. There was a burning bush on fire, man. It's Pesach.
Big fan.
Cause a Pharaoh Jew got iron, man. It's Pesach.
Change fans. One.
So we took a side of Mitzrayim. It's Pesach.
Let's grab.
One. So it's bad if you have chametz.
Clean it up.
Kids singing Manishtana. Kids singing Manishtana. Kids singing Manishtana. Cause uptown Kids singing Manashtana. Kids singing Manashtana. Kids singing Manashtana.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. The music we were just listening to was 613 with Uptown Passover. And while the music was playing, we've been joined by Ames Public Relations Officer Susan Guiazda. Welcome, Susan.
Good morning.
A lot has been planned for the month of April by the City of Ames, and so we asked Susan to come in to talk to us about that. And thanks for coming to give us a taste of what's in store. Is this an especially busy month?
In spring, there's always a lot of activities, but this April does seem particularly busy. We've got a lot of great events going on, plus one that doesn't come along very often, a special event at the end of April celebrating the 25th anniversary of City Hall being in the former Ames High School building.
Oh, wow. Tell us what is planned for that. That sounds great.
Well, at this point, we're still in the preliminary planning stages, but we're very excited. April 28th and 29th of 1990, the building opened as City Hall, and there was a two-day celebration. We have found some of those people who were on the original Celebrate Ames Committee to come back and join us for the 25th celebration. And as luck would have it, April 28th is a Tuesday this year, and we will be able to have a recognition in the morning and again that evening at the City Council meeting.
Great. And is there going to be some sort of exhibit about the building as it was before when it was Central High School?
Well, what we're going to do is we'll have self-guided tours so those people who are interested in walking around City Hall can see what it used to be. We do have people that come through occasionally and say, oh, I used to go to science class in this room, or this is where the cafeteria was. As you know, there have been some renovations even recently with the City Hall building. The lower level and the first floor have gone through some renovations that were recently completed. So there's been changes in the building, even from the 25 years that city government's been located there. And a little known fact, probably long-term Ames residents would remember, City Hall, before it was consolidated in the current building, was in 8 locations around the downtown.
Huh. Really?
Yeah. The depot was a location. There was a laundromat across the street that City Hall, then some of the city services were occupied in.
That's
where they
building. Did their laundry. Yeah. No, just kidding.
The Jacobson building on, I think it's South 5th, South 4th, was another location kind of in the downtown area. But they were scattered, and it wasn't unusual for a citizen to come into one of the satellite locations and have to go to several other locations. And so it was really a wonderful community asset. Residents voted to tax themselves to pay for the renovation of that Ames High School building that had sat vacant. And we were able to renovate it, and it is the beautiful City Hall building that it is today.
And are there going to be some other local organizations involved in that anniversary celebration?
Well, in addition to having the celebration of the 25th anniversary, there will be presented one of the bronze history plaques that are being presented by the Ames Historical Society in partnership with the Ames Historic Preservation Commission and the Main Street Cultural District. They are collaborating with local organizations and businesses downtown to install bronze history plaques that basically tell the story of the building. And ours will say Ames High School on it and will tell the story of how the building was built. We will be presented that plaque on April 28th, and then we'll be installing it at a later point.
And I remember it as Central Junior High School.
Absolutely. Those people who have been here a while remember. If they don't remember Ames High, you might remember Central Junior High and the tunnel that ran under the building.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I went to Welch, which doesn't exist at all anymore in its former form. And then we were allowed for one day to come down to Central to spend a day in Central. And, of course, I think in our teacher's eyes it was some sort of exchange educationally. Of course, to us, it's just an opportunity to check out the boys in the other schools. Anyway, so what else? Tell us what else.
Well, we're most excited about tomorrow's Eco Fair on Saturday, April 4th, and we will have the annual Eco Fair.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Years ago, it was started as the Energy Fair. The focus was on conserving electricity, but we realized as an organization, we have several other utilities, including our water and our stormwater, and we kind of blew the event up about 5 years ago, and we became the Eco Fair. And so
that's a great event.
It is a super event. It's all about conservation and sustainability, in addition to city departments showcasing what they do and providing public education and outreach. We open it up to local vendors and businesses who sell sustainable product, who have information about conservation, and we always get a lot of participation. The event starts at 10 a.m. at the Community Center Gym, and it goes till 2 p.m., and we welcome anybody to stop in and get some information, look around, grab a cookie, and hopefully leave a little bit more educated about helping the environment than they were when they got there.
Yeah, meet some really inspiring businesses. And yeah. And the community center is in the Ames City Hall.
It absolutely is, 515 Clark Avenue. There's we ask that people enter through the community center side, which is on 5th Street, and you could run in for a few minutes and still gather a lot of information. We have prizes that we give to people. You can register for door prizes, or you could probably spend 4 hours there. There's just so much to look at and so much to do.
How many different organizations and businesses usually show up?
We have more than 40, and they are sort of throughout the gym. We're using the stage this year, and then actually outside in the west parking lot, you'll see the bookmobile always comes. We have our fire trucks that show up, and I believe we have a couple of energy efficient cars this year from local car dealers that will be showcasing some of their product. We actually at the City of Ames just purchased an all electric Nissan Leaf. So we were hoping to have that to showcase it. It's not quite ready. We're still putting our city logo on it right now. But it's another sign of the commitment the City of Ames has to sustainability.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I'll be there. I didn't know about it, but it sounds like I would learn a lot.
And you can get we always give our participants a sustainable gift. This year you can get a reusable grocery tote. Mm-hmm. And I love to see those all around town. We ask, don't get those plastic or paper bags. Bring your reusable tote to the grocery store, and we're going to help you do that by giving you one.
And you save 5 cents. They take 5 cents off your
that's right.
Your bill.
Can you give us an example of a green business that you would see at a fair like this?
Rain Barrels of Iowa has come for several years, and we do have several appliance companies that come. You're probably aware that the City of Ames Electric Services does a smart energy rebate if you buy an Energy Star appliance. So we get a lot of the appliance companies showing the upgraded washing machines, some of the front loaders, top loaders, side loaders that are much more energy efficient than they used to be. We have more energy efficient refrigerators and dishwashers that we rebate. So a lot of appliances will show up there. Sometimes we get landscaping companies that will talk about the we do a pea-free fertilizer. We don't want phosphorus in our stormwater, so we like to use alternatives. We get some high school groups sometimes that come. We get Iowa State groups that come. The ISU Prism Car has come. I think for every year we've had this event, they show their Prism Car, which if you've never seen is very interesting to see. Mm-hmm. It's covered in the solar tile. You can see how one person sort of slips into it.
It's a solar-powered car.
Solar-powered car, and it looks like no other car you've ever seen.
There's a lot of reasons to come to the festival.
Absolutely, and it's for all ages. We mm-hmm. really emphasize that there are activities for kids. There's kids' areas that show children how the concept of stormwater, about how why washing your car maybe in your front driveway would cause grease and debris to run off into the storm sewer, and then the storm sewer empties into the waterways. Sometimes that's a harder concept for kids to think about, mm-hmm. and so we have activities that showcase that. Things like making recyclable crayons. If you have a lot of broken crayon pieces around, you can put all those little pieces into mm-hmm. silicone cups and sort of melt them back into a reusable crayon. Things like that help kids connect back to what is their role in sustainability.
Very nice.
That's really very nice. Yeah.
So what else do you have for us?
Well, one of our most popular events is Yard Waste Free Day.
Yay.
That is on April 11th. The weather has been so pleasant recently. I know so many people are out doing their yards and getting their gardens prepared for spring planting. Yard Waste Free Day is always very, very popular. We get calls probably January or February. When is it? It is April 11th this year. It's from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Chemnitz Technology, which is the same company that we have used the last couple of years.
And what happens?
You bag up your garbage, your yard waste. We will take grass clippings, leaves, and brush for this event, and you take them out. Chemnitz is located south on University Boulevard. You just keep going. Once it hits the gravel, keep going. It's about a mile and a half on the gravel road, and you're able to drop off the yard waste at no cost. And that is a real convenience for a lot of people who have a lot of mature trees in their yard and end up with a lot of bags of yard waste each year. This is an opportunity to dispose of that at no cost.
And it's just one day. I know in the fall there were multiple days.
Yeah, but the fall always has four, mm-hmm. and then there's just one spring yard waste day. So
and that, again, is when?
On Saturday, April 11th. So 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. All the information on city activities is on our website at cityofames.org. So we encourage you, if you forgot to write this date down or you try to think about it later on and you can't remember that it's Saturday, April 11th, just look on our website, cityofames.org, and those events are on the calendar and on the news right on the front page.
And there's a photo treasure hunt coming up?
Yeah. Ames is part of the Ames Area MPO. That's the Metropolitan Planning Organization. And they are working on the long-range transportation plan. For a lot of people, they don't always think about why this is relevant in their lives. But if you are a non-traditional commuter, you bike or you walk to work, or you use public transportation, or even if you drive vehicles, the long-range transportation plan is important. It basically lays out the, you know, the roadmap, to use that expression, of how our transportation planning will happen over the years. And we know that there are issues in the community, that there are connections or disconnections that make it difficult for people to get from one part of town to another. So we're asking people to take pictures. If you haven't been on the AmesMobility2040.com website, check it out, sign up, talk, be part of the conversation. There's a lot of discussion out there about how Ames could become a stronger biking community or walking community, about how we know people don't all have vehicles here, and how can the bus system be stronger. We want your information and we want your photos about where are their problems and where do we like what's been going on.
So in other words, if somebody knows of some spot which is a problem for mm-hmm. them in terms of their mobility
yep.
in town, take a picture.
Take a picture. Let us know. We made some improvements on Ash Avenue, close to Mortensen Road, where you had a on-road bike path, but it's separated with like a concrete barrier. And so there's it's another way of a little bit different than just striping a street, because you're actually physically separated from the vehicles. It was only a small stretch of road. We've gotten a lot of favorable feedback on that, mm-hmm. saying, yes, I like that. We've experimented with sharrows, and that's a word, if you don't know, you probably have driven past them but didn't realize it. For example, on 6th Street by Brookside Park, the street is stamped with a biker, and mm-hmm. it has these little chevrons, and that means be on the lookout. Caution, bikers may be on this road. It's a bike-friendly road, so you mm-hmm. need to share the road with the bikers. So sharrows are just basically an alert for drivers to be cautious. We have on-street striping for bikers. So you may be driving and there's a bike lane next to you. And that's something you have to think about when you make a right-hand turn. Are you checking the bike lane as well? So we have a lot of tools out there in the toolbox for transportation, but we want to hear from people where those things are working and where we need to improve. Mm-hmm. Always ways, reasons to improve. Mm-hmm. You're probably aware we're experimenting with roundabouts on mm-hmm. South University.
Mm-hmm.
Has led to a lot of conversation. People have very strong feelings about roundabouts, whether they help traffic move more slowly or whether they are more quickly or more efficiently, and other people think they're more difficult to navigate. I think it's always a good idea to try something.
Mm-hmm.
And we are moving forward on the first roundabout will be at South University Boulevard and Airport Road. And if you've ever been at that four-way intersection where it's a four-way stop, mm-hmm. it can get backed up. Mm-hmm. The idea would be that a roundabout might improve the efficiency of the traffic flow through that area, and it will take probably some getting used to navigate through there, but let's give it a try and see what happens.
Okay, great. And I love the idea of people taking photographs about problem areas. I think that's a great idea.
We're always looking for that kind of feedback. And again, that website is AmesMobility2040.com. Sign on, and I'm a member of it, and you get constant reminders and email telling you what's going on.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Susan, for coming in. Really appreciate it.
And, anytime. I'm glad to be here.
We'd love to have you actually come on a more regular basis so we can get updates from the city.
Yeah,
really,
it's great to hear all the things from a knowledgeable person.
Yeah, well, and like I said, April is busy, but there's always stuff going on. So love to be back.
Great.
Okay, so let's hear from Belinda.
Hello, this is Belinda Merritt, and I have the live music for April 3rd through the 9th. On Friday, April 3rd, Jason Wallsmith will be at Westtown Pub, 4518 Mortensen Road. Mumford Electric Jury and the Maytags will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. On Saturday, April 4th, TUGG will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. Neil Hewitt will be at Taking It Easy Lounge, 129 Lincoln Way. Final Mix will be at Crossroads Tavern, 1790 Giddings Street in Cali. Chris Bathgate with Paul Doffing will be at Blue Stem, 3329 Lincoln Way. This is an all-ages show, and tickets are available at eventbrite.com. On Sunday, April 5th, the Pines will be at Blue Stem, 3329 Lincoln Way. This is also an all-ages show, and tickets are also available at eventbrite.com. On Monday, April 6th, Nevada, Nevada will be at DG's Tap, 125 Main Street. On Tuesday, April 7th, Oh Honey with Public will be at the Maintenance Shop in ISU's Memorial Union. On Thursday, April 9th, Paul Doffing, Mike Manson, and Jake Alaka will be at DG's Tap, 125 Main Street. That's all I have for this week. Thank you.
Thank you, Belinda. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg and Gail Seiler, and we spoke today with Ames Public Relations Officer Susan Guiasta, Ames High School teacher Joe Brecky, and two high school students.
Jonah Glenn and Will Weber were with us.
And also Jim Werbel, who is usually a KHOI reporter, but today came as a guest to explain the holiday of Passover. Happy Passover, everybody, and happy Easter.
Thank you to all, Jim and Belinda, as always, for keeping us informed about live music. Local Talk was engineered by Rebecca Brown. Thank you. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You will find today's show on the homepage of KHOIFM.org as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thank you, Ron. The posting will include links to all of the online events and resources that were mentioned during the show.
KHOI will be holding its bi-yearly pledge drive from April 24th to May 4th. This is a great time to get involved as a volunteer at KHOI to help out with answering the phones. So if that appeals to you, come by the station at 410 Douglas, the Ames Pantorium building, and we will welcome your participation. Please remember that you, as the listener, are the most important part of KHOI through your participation as the audience and your generous donations. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.